Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, The Proactive Manager, Chapter 2, Meetings, Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, can I change the meetings I run? How can I change the meetings I run? And can I change the meetings my team attends? If you'd like answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Have you ever been in a meeting and presented a plan to others only to see the look on your boss's face drop because your boss is unaware of your ideas and recommendations and doesn't necessarily agree? Yikes, don't fall into this trap. You have a professional obligation and courtesy to keep your boss informed. More importantly, you want your manager's public support of your ideas in future meetings. Learn how to communicate well with your boss, even if your boss isn't doing one-on-ones with you. There are behaviors that you can learn to keep you in sync with your boss and your peers. Contact Maggie to learn how everyone on your team can learn these valuable tools together. Email us at customerservice@manager-tools.com and ask about bringing the client effective communicator session on site today. Well, welcome to the floor in today's cast, a special guest, Mr. Mark Horstman. Welcome, Mark.
Wow, thanks. I'm a guest on a cast I invented. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been gone for a couple of years, right?
I know, right? You have. Well, I mean, you make a guest appearance, I'm going to say, periodically when Kate is traveling or whatever the case may be, which is the case this time.
Right.
Well, welcome. We're going to continue a series of guidance. We started this series, the Proactive Manager series, that is, earlier with a chapter one. This is chapter two. Now, in terms of this proactive manager guidance, the situation is such that you've taken over a new team, and there are all kinds of things your predecessor did that you don't necessarily agree with, whether you worked for that predecessor or not. But like virtually all managers, you figure, well, that's the way it's done here, right?
Yeah. And actually, Sarah, sometimes I think it's not even that. Even if you don't, we said you don't necessarily agree with stuff, but there are managers who take over and just assume they're supposed to agree and are not thinking critically about whether or not, since this thing you're talking about has been going on for 3 years, whether it has been updated, whether it's been improved, whether it's good. I mean, think about pre-COVID and then COVID and then post-COVID. A lot of people are still running things with most of their people back in the office. They're running it post-COVID the way they did during COVID, which is not smart. And so I don't think we necessarily have to say that it's, you know, that you don't necessarily agree with. It's just managers need to understand that when it's your team, it's your team. You don't have to run it the way somebody else ran it just because that's the received wisdom regarding how things are done.
Yeah, I agree. And to your point, there's always that thought, well, maybe they have a really good reason for doing it, right? A really good reason. I don't know because I haven't been here. And we talk substantially at Manager Tools about the 90-day rule and don't just charge on in there changing everything. So we don't change anything, or we don't change everything anyway, right away. And that's probably fine. But what happens next is we all get busy doing our job. And what happens is we forget to change anything at all. And that's where the mistake happens.
And plus, after like 90 days, you're starting to get into, hey, I've kind of got my own initiatives here I want to start. And you're like, I don't really want to mess with the operational stuff, the logistical stuff, the foundational stuff. We'll just let that be bad. It's fine. And again, as you say, that's a mistake. Now, this is the second in a series of casts. I have been wanting to write these casts for about 5 years and don't know why I didn't. It's about being proactive as a manager. Too many managers, as we said just a minute ago, just accept the status quo, but effective managers don't like the status quo. Even if you're a high C or a high S, and so you like the status quo, you don't want to change things. If they're not broken, don't change them. But the problem with that statement about if it's not broken, don't mess with it, is that the broken implies a false reality between broken and effective. There's broken, and then there's accepted as normal, that kind of works, but could be better. And then there's effective. And so just because something's, quote, not broken, meaning it's normal, it's average, it's okay, everybody does it that way, that doesn't mean it's the most effective way to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you're a high C or a high S and you don't want to change things, the fact is, if you want to be an effective executive or effective manager, you're going to have to be willing to change things. There are all kinds of things you can do that give you 5 or 10% improvements. Maybe they're not that, maybe not that initiative that gives you 30%, but 5 or 10% over time really, really matters. And as we've said hundreds of times on all of our casts, you do not get paid to be yourself. You do not get paid to be comfortable. You get paid to deliver sustainable results regardless of your temperament, your style. Oh, I hate that word. As if there are things at work that you should have style about. Not even attire should be style.
I had a really good conversation actually with a manager this week who I was teaching. We were in a class. And what did he say to me? He said, well, Sarah, if I deliver feedback this way, it won't sound like me. It will sound unnatural. Yeah. And my response was, yes, but I'm sure you've learned, as I've learned, the natural me isn't one that's loved by everyone. Imagine that. But it's that. It's, yeah, you're right. Well, but your natural you isn't great for all the people all the time either. So something that's more effective and isn't naturally you doesn't really change the it's unnatural or not equation. It just changes the productivity equation.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with that authenticity, or that's going to sound like me. That is a person who's basically saying, I am not willing to try anything new. Mm-hmm. No, everybody knows me as this. So get used to getting paid what you're being paid now for the rest of your life. And in fact, in 5 years, your job will have surpassed you so much that you actually won't get to keep your job. And you'll only be able to apply for low-level jobs for the rest of your life because you've said, I'm not willing to change. Now, I think—
To do the right things, that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's why the authenticity movement is a mistake in some parts of its application in the professional world. Yes, folks, bring your authentic self in. But one of the things your organization demands about your authentic self is the willingness and ability to learn and change your behavior in order to be more effective. Yeah. And if you're tied to your own behavior as opposed to what's effective, you're going to get left behind in the modern world. There's just no question about it.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. That's absolutely it. Effective managers are proactive and they change things. And a classic example of the status quo thinking by managers is assuming that, in today's cast, all of their meetings or all the meetings that their team attends, both internal to the team and externally, are valid and are effective. But they're not, and we recommend that you change them proactively. So, Mark, do you want to go over our outline?
Oh, sure. Okay, good. So, the first 90-day rule still applies, but during that time, you can still think and plan for your future proactivity. Number two, don't assume your boss knows or cares what you're doing internally. He or she doesn't. Rest assured, folks, they do not. Review all your internal team meetings. It's not hard. Very straightforward process. We'll walk through it. Establish the two baseline standards. Hopefully everybody knows what those are. All effective managers do two things. They do one-on-ones and they have a weekly staff meeting. Eliminate unnecessary internal team meetings, which you have complete control over. There are some more exceptions like stand-ups and Scrum and so on. Then you also have to review external meetings. And there's some things you can do there, even though you don't control them. And lastly, there's some meeting behaviors we'll finish with that we need to standardize. Irrespective of what meeting you're in, there are some standard meeting behaviors you ought to do. And when people complain about meetings, they miss the point that meetings are necessary. And people say, oh, Mark, well, they're necessary evils. I said, well, no, actually, they're not. They're necessary. Human organizations form to serve society, and the nature of the work requires interpersonal communication. Because if it's just one person, if you're just a cobbler making shoes, you don't have to talk to anybody. But when you hire an apprentice, you're going to have to teach him or her some stuff. And they're going to have to talk to you about the status of their stuff. And there are people all the time saying, well, I don't like meetings. I don't want to go to meetings. I don't like talking on email. I don't want to talk to my boss in a one-on-one. It's like, too bad. You joined a human organization. And so meetings are not necessary evils. They're necessary. The reason everyone thinks they're evil is because no one knows how to run one, and they all act like doofuses all the time. They start late. They finish late. They don't have an agenda. They let people just run off the agenda with whatever they want. And nobody's willing to say, nope, I'm sorry, Bob, time's up. Nope, we're moving on.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so we're going to run through this standard meeting behavior stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Now, folks, just before we get into the guidance itself today, I know that we've kind of alluded to this or slightly mentioned it, but this is the second in a series of proactive manager behaviors. Because new listeners are always joining the Manager Tools community and are listening, note, we're going to revisit the principles and concepts behind overall proactive managers in these episodes, which is why we call them chapters here. So, while we encourage everyone to re-listen to the underlying principles, if you heard our first chapter, which was on reporting, you might choose to skip past the first two agenda items in this case to get more specific guidance on meetings, given the fact that you've probably heard these concepts, albeit from Kate and I, not necessarily from Mark and I. In previous guidance.
Yeah.
All right. So the first part, the first 90-day rule still applies, but you can still think and plan for proactivity. Now, folks, when we recommend that you act as a proactive manager, that doesn't supersede your need to build trust and learn about your team and understand its methods and truly learn why the activities that are in place are in place themselves. So, as we've said before, your team is going to have to carry your water for quite some time. It's going to take you a while to get up to speed. There are a bunch of other people that are there making sure you're successful. And if you insist, if you push changes, they're going to see this as ill-informed, and it will make your entire tenure one of digging yourself back out of the uninformed hole that you dug yourself into due to the fact that you didn't spend enough time building trust prior to making changes.
What amazes me about this is there are kind of two types of managers, even though there could be any number, but basically managers fall into two categories, broad categories. One is they don't ever change anything. Mm-hmm. And the other is they start changing stuff right away. And they both don't work. And it's just recognizing that there's a period of time in the beginning where you got to build trust. We didn't make that up, guys. We're not recommending that. That's a standard sort of human relationship trick is to build trust with people. You wait a little bit and you find out what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
And then you start changing. And if you don't change anything at all, if you go the 90 days and 180 and 270, people are going to say like, wow, okay, he just took over somebody else's team. He has no thoughts of her. She has no thoughts of her own. Or the other one is you start changing things immediately. They're like, how do you know whether what you're doing is any good or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I hope what you're going to say next is the 90-day rule for new initiatives doesn't mean not paying attention to what the heck's going on, right? Mm-hmm. During the 90 days, think of the compilation of the activities or the initiatives you might start relative to how the team is run, separate from maybe what you're working on or those kinds of things. Think of it as a simple way to use our guidance about the Delta file, right? It's a version of our Delta file. We're in that waiting and trust building period. You're just going to keep a little note that says, here are the things I'm going to change sometimes in the future. Now, I've kept Delta files for years for when I got promoted or when I changed jobs or whatever. And there are times when I looked at it and said, oh, that one was ill-informed. I thought A was a problem. It turns out A is really not a problem. So your Delta file will Delta on you a little bit.
And folks, just to interject, going back to something we mentioned earlier about a lot of this stuff is we want to make sure that the new people to our audience are included in these conversations.
Yes.
If you don't know what Mark means by Delta file, we have a podcast on Delta file. So you can go back and you can listen to that as well to kind of get caught up on some of these other concepts.
Which is basically just a list of stuff that you're going to change.
You want to change. Yeah, exactly. It's on the radar. Yeah. It's, I want to change this, or I definitely don't want to do this, or whatever it may be. It's those ideas and thoughts that are going to play into the future.
Yeah. And I don't know that I said it when we recorded it 15, 18 years ago, but the Delta file, one of the great things about it is too many managers think of stuff they want to change, don't write it down, think of another thing they want to change, don't want to write it down, and then start feeling burdened and guilty, like there's so much stuff and I don't change anything ever. And I don't. And so you write it all down. And then when there's an opportunity to make a change, you make the change, and you're constantly looking, you're adding to it and subtracting from it all the time. And look, here's the thing. We talked about reporting last time. We're talking about meetings this time and proactivity. Think about processes, folks. Do not assume that every process your company, that your team has, is a company process that is triple certified and you can't touch it. Mm-hmm. In fact, think just the opposite. Every single process that your team uses is yours. And you can change it however you want, as long as you can account for risk and improves output, improves results, and the sustainability of the results. Any systems there are, any reporting, as we mentioned, work assignments, who's assigned what work and how that work is assigned, how that work is communicated about. Personnel development, for example. Don't assume that the way personnel development is done by the previous manager is the right way. The average manager couldn't find his head with both hands, I'll keep it G-rated, when it comes to personnel development. They all just assume that whatever they know is whatever they know. But HR does not have time to teach you or build for you the detailed systems around personal development. And of course, we have plenty of podcasts on that. You could just use our stuff and it will be creative and new and people will be very impressed by you. But the purpose of this cast obviously is about meetings, and meetings are one of the team communication systems that you have that we got to work on.
Exactly. So there's this sensitivity around, or this awareness of this 90-day period in time where you don't want to make too many changes and you want to gather a list and you want to start thinking critically about maybe what's happening, but don't change too much. Further, though, you can start one-on-ones immediately. Don't think that the 90-day rule or the 90-day don't change anything creates a situation where you ought wait 90 days to begin meeting weekly with the folks on your team. Your boss is not going to stop a new manager from meeting with each of their directs for 30 minutes to say hello and get to know them. Now, if you're familiar with our one-on-one guidance, you'll know there's this 3 to 5 week period of time that we say wait before you begin one-on-ones. However, that 3 to 5 weeks is for managers who've already been managing their existing team for a while, and therefore, both the manager and the existing team members' calendars are full of existing work.
Yeah.
And for the record, we do say often wait 5 weeks just to eliminate any possible complaints about busyness. I mean, if you look at your calendar tomorrow, next week, it's way too busy to add one-on-ones. If you look 3 weeks from now, there are far more opportunities for one-on-ones. If you look 5 weeks from now, no one's going to be able to say, oh, well, I totally can't do it. I am slammed 5 weeks from now. So generally, that's why that time frame exists. But 3 weeks is plenty. And you can probably get away with starting your one-on-ones manager who is new to this team the second full week you're in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do an example. If you take over on a Wednesday, maybe no one-on-ones your first full week. That is starting the following Monday, which gives you time to brief everyone and answer questions that full first Monday to Friday week. And in that case, everyone's going to be wanting to meet with you anyway. I mean, let's face it, you're the new manager. They want to know what's coming. They want to know what's happening. They don't even know you.
There may be a couple people who don't want to meet with you, and that's a problem too. No, I don't need to meet with you. Like, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And for those people, I mean, you can wait a week with them.
Yeah.
They work for you now. And while we believe in the primacy of relationship power and trust, we also know you have enough role power to insist on a 30-minute meeting with the people on your team.
Yeah. And then in 12 weeks, you continue rolling the gradual rollout of the Manager Tools Trinity. You do 12 weeks of just one-on-ones. You don't introduce feedback coaching or delegation yet. I know you high Ds want to go fast, but trust me, you go fast, you'll have a wreck and then you'll have to start over. Then you do feedback. You do positive feedback for 8 weeks only, and then you add in negative feedback, and then you add in coaching and delegation. And folks, it does take 8 to 12 months to roll all these tools out. And we've tried to speed them up for you, and we've never figured out a way to do it. Maybe there is a way. It'd be great, but we don't know it. And after 30 years of testing, we've decided, yeah, this is probably as good as it gets when it comes to human beings.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to human behavior, this is the speed of change which managers can engage in while still maintaining those relationships with the people on their team and not doing too much too quickly. So all that said, you're going to engage in these behaviors, again, starting within that first 90 days. And as you get close to the end of that 90 days, and it doesn't have to be 90 days precisely. I mean, you don't have to be tracking this thing day by day to make sure it's exactly 90 days. But when you start approaching that period, start making plans for the rolling out of new initiatives, as well as changes to existing systems, existing processes, things that have come up on your list. And in this 90-day period of time, you haven't had any data to alleviate this as being an option to change in the future.
Right.
And back to the topic of meetings, that is, we guarantee you there are meetings that are overcome by events.
Yep. Right?
There are just things that are popping up.
Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this? Why am I going to this? Right? Exactly. Absolutely. These things will exist.
And rather than complaining about that everything's all messed up, oh my gosh, I can't believe this meeting's dumb or this meeting's dumb or why are you still doing it that way? And there's inertia. There's absolute inertia. Well, that's the way the boss did it. And so things gradually changed over time and suddenly it doesn't work anymore and nobody realizes it. We'd wager fairly liberally here in 2024 that many rules and processes were initiated, as we mentioned before, during the pandemic, and wouldn't ever have been in place before the professional pandemic-induced diaspora that sent everybody to working from home. So for those of you in this new era of work post-pandemic, you have an opportunity and really a responsibility to go, let's take a look at the stuff we're doing. It's not that hard. And make some changes and get back to more efficiency and more effectiveness.
Yeah. You know, Mark, I would suggest that there are some things we do now that, I mean, think about how many professionals have come to their professional career in this either during or post-pandemic world that we now live in, or started new jobs during, or didn't even realize the things that were being done because of pandemic stuff.
Yeah. They assume that's the way companies were always run.
Exactly. You assume that's the way they've always run. I mean, a simple example is several companies we know have moved all of their meetings to begin at 5 minutes after the top or bottom of the hour. Now, not that meetings were ever really efficient when they started on time, but they were started late for a time because everything was being done by Zoom.
Right.
Before this world where we all did all of the meetings virtually all the time and we had to do that for a few years, the meetings started at the top of the hour. And now that we're in many cases either back together or we're not in this pandemic phase, we could begin to start our meetings on time. Not again, not that they actually did at the top of the hour. Again, I mean, that was a change that was made because of that. So if you work in an organization where all the meetings start at five after and you're just like, well, this is the way it is. It's the way it's always been. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's actually not.
Look, it's the same thing that we have no doubt. I've seen it. There are rules requiring reporting changes that took into account remote work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But as work returns to the office, those rules should be repealed. You should be wanting to, rather than somebody having a Zoom call with you, say, no, I want to meet in person. Or, oh, by the way, I need that spreadsheet before we meet. You're not just going to screen share it with me because you can come by my desk and show it to me. And you review all those and say, is this really the right way to do it? And by the way, don't be afraid to ask your people, is this really the most efficient way to do this? Because it seems really clumsy and awkward. And don't hesitate to eliminate stuff. Because now, according to the news, according to the Wall Street Journal, COVID is now being treated like the flu.
Mm-hmm.
So work rules about you can't come to work, for instance, during work. Now, this may be one thing that your corporation does, but if your corporation doesn't weigh in, if your organization doesn't weigh in detail, special procedures for people who come to work, if they're not feeling well, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should change those as well.
Mm-hmm. And something that I've found now, currently, it's probably because I'm doing a lot of work right now with a single client who has a very strong culture. Yeah. And one of the things that I've heard of many people in that organization, or I should say from many people in that organization, is this concept of, oh, that's just our culture. Culture is nothing more than the behaviors that are being exhibited within your organization. So that is the culture now, I suppose, to start at five after, but that wasn't the culture before COVID.
Yeah.
And that can again be the culture just because that's the behaviors we engage in now and we keep calling them our organizational culture doesn't mean they're not behaviors that can be changed or done differently. Your culture isn't a non-moving, stationary object that doesn't change. Yeah.
Well, in fact, there are two cultures. There's one which the company espouses. You might even say there are three. Then there is what people do. And what people do is the actual culture. And then there's the culture that individuals, not the company, espouse. And in many cases, that is a defense of what they want to do, mm-hmm. which they have wrapped in some corporate generalized statement saying, I do this because of this cultural issue. It's like, yeah, but that violates five other of the corporation's cultural guidance. So I don't know. And basically, it's just people saying, I don't want to change.
Yeah, I don't want to change it. It's very confusing to you if I say organizational culture. You don't know any better. Now, I do want to make one final point about this 90-day rule concept. If you're standing up a new team, which doesn't have systems and processes and procedures and the like in place right now, there is no 90-day rule. The 90-day rule applies for teams that have processes and procedures and were well underway existed prior to your arrival. But if you're starting up your new team, you do what you think is right now. You start one-on-ones. You build systems for work assignments and for reporting. You implement the use of deliverables rather than tasks. Work is not done until it is reported as being done. That is a deliverable. Versus a task assignment, do this thing. And you're going to do things like start simplified project management, passive reporting. The individual who does the work is obligated to report on the work so others don't have to wonder what the status of the work is.
Yeah.
things like that, right? Who does what by when?
Right.
In terms of your deliverables. Again, if you're starting up a new team, ask your boss for guidance, let alone approval about anything in terms of how you run your team internally.
Yep.
Exactly. And sure, with a new team, you can ask for external directional guidance. Where is your boss's organization going? What does your boss think is critical to the organization? What are your egg yolk deliverables, your glass balls that you simply can't drop? Because if you drop them, they're going to smash. But internal stuff, from the moment you start, is your call. And the worst thing you can possibly do is act on your fear of being wrong by doing nothing. Doing nothing is probably, in this situation of a new team, the worst action you can take is doing nothing at all.
They didn't give you the team because you assumed everybody else would tell you what to do. You know, it's your team. Go run it.
Mm-hmm. Young That's exactly person, it.
You should be able to do it. And I will tell you, I probably should have done more casts. We should have done more casts on this in the last 20 years. The fear of being wrong, motivating people to doing nothing, is one of the hidden killers of careers and effectiveness in organizations today. People, they don't want to be right. There are some people who say, no, I want to be right before I do something. The problem with that is, in many of these situations, there is no right. There is effective, mm-hmm. but rightness is a way too high a standard to apply to people working together. And they said, I don't know what the right answer is. All these other teams seem to be running well. They have the right answer. Well, you don't realize it when you dig into it. All those other teams, they're all run differently, depending upon the boss. And you may say, well, all teams should be run the same. Actually, no, all teams should not be run the same. Yes, there are some standard behaviors, and mm-hmm. we know what they are.
Yeah, that's what we talk about here.
For 20 years. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that make the biggest difference. But after that, there are all kinds of ways to run a team.
Yeah.
And your way doesn't have to be right. And if you paralyze yourself by saying, I'm worried about being wrong, I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble, so I'm not going to do anything, nobody will ever give you a new team, ever. And one of the coolest things in management, in a career, this is particularly true in the factory and operational world, is to get a greenfield team. A greenfield is the name for a factory that the person in charge of the factory got it when it was a greenfield. Literally, there was nothing there, and they got to build it and hire their team and then run it in the beginning. Although usually it's 2 or 3 year process and then somebody else gets to take over. Everybody who's ever been a factory manager, a plant manager always says, my favorite time was the greenfield. It was absolutely great. Well, if you're given a new team, go make decisions and you're going to be wrong. You're absolutely going to be wrong.
Yeah. It's better to try something than just continue to do it wrong as you know it to be wrong.
Yep.
Because you're afraid of it being wronger if you do something.
I think Michael Jordan has a thing where he says, I took 900 shots at the end of a game in order to win, and I missed. Mm-hmm. I think there were 900. Maybe that's the total number of shots, and he missed like 200 of them. Okay.
Okay.
The greatest guy ever, the GOAT, and yeah. He missed.
And so, he missed, exactly. There you go.
April 30th to May 1st, we're coming to Boston. We're hosting an EMC and ECC in Boston. Tuesday, April 30th, and Wednesday, May 1st. 2 days. Effective management, Tuesday. Effective communications, Wednesday. If you're in the area, or maybe just one hop from Boston Logan, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to being a more effective professional. Better management, better communication. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
So what's our next topic?
All right. The next thing we're going to talk about then is don't assume your boss knows or cares what you're doing internally. Your boss doesn't.
Yeah. And this is my favorite part, by the way, sir. This is my absolute favorite part of the cast.
I love it.
I look forward. Of course, these are manager tools cast, so I probably won't be back. But this is my favorite part. I want to debunk the myth that everyone is looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
I can assure you, nobody is looking over your shoulder. They have too many fish to fry. Frankly, even if you have if you're a manager and your director, you think of her or him as a micromanager, their bandwidth for micromanaging 6 or 7 subordinate managers is zero.
Yeah. Oh, they don't have time for that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
That's exactly it. So generally, folks, what we'd suggest is once you're done building trust and learning how things work, it's time to start taking action. Again, 90 days isn't a scientific number, right? It's not like perfect math. I mean, you don't have to set a timer for 90 days exactly. It's just roughly about the time that trust takes to build. And again, 90 days is not a scientific number. It's not exact science. It's not exact math. It's just roughly the amount of time it takes for trust to be built. That is, it's growing. And 90 days is roughly when you've learned enough to know about where your team is individually so that you can begin that new tasking and change the way things have been run up until now. Start making some changes in an educated fashion.
Yeah. And don't ask approval from your boss for the changes you've decided to make to your team. They're your changes on your team. And so your boss is interested and probably doesn't have time to be briefed and doesn't want to run your team.
Yeah, that's why.
That's why she has you.
If they wanted to do your job, dude, they would just take both salaries and do all of it.
Yeah,
but they don't. That's why you exist. And yes, it's possible that you're going to end up working for someone who is more of a micromanager than is what would be considered reasonable. But
yeah,
let's face it, directors just have less time than frontline managers to be micromanaging, even if, let's say, they were a micromanager, or they had that sort of propensity or leaning toward being a micromanager, they don't have time for it. And by the time someone's become a director, they've been managed themselves as a manager a few times, which means it's probably been done to them and they probably hated it. So there's also that. They've got more experience being managed as a manager, and they know what it feels like to be that person in the middle who's always being cut out at the knees or second-guessed or micromanaged, if you will.
Yeah. Now, if you have a less than intelligent boss and you're worried about that, we still recommend you don't ask permission. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just do what you believe you need to do. And if your boss has a problem with something, they might say something. But we want to cover something that I'm going to say specifically about this rollout, but it actually has more general implication. Mm-hmm. Just because your boss asks questions doesn't mean she's saying you have to stop doing that uh-huh. thing. Our guidance is when it comes to team internal systems and processes, like the Trinity and reports and meetings and projects, it's your call until you are told specifically to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not mean, why are you doing that way? In fact, Sarah used to report to me, and we had a conversation the other day where she said to one of her colleagues at Managerials, no, Mark used to ask me all the time, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it that way. And she was smart enough to know, or just high D enough to know, that's the way I want to do it. And one of the things directors and executives do is they don't try to get their direct report managers or executives to run their team the way they would. Now, there are some non-negotiables like one-on-ones and certain reporting and so on. But for the most part, that's not what they do. Mm-hmm. And unless your boss says you will specifically stop doing one-on-ones, which in which case you need to get a new boss, you don't have to stop. If they ask, why are you doing these one-on-ones? Well, here's why. It really works. I used them in my last three previous teams. I had the highest engagement scores of anybody. We hear from the people like this all the time. Mm-hmm. Their engagement scores are off the charts. And of course, no executive cares because the executives are using engagement surveys just to do whatever the heck they want to the organization. And so your boss won't necessarily say to you, stop. And if they don't say stop, don't stop. Now, some people say to me, well, Mark, that's risky. Oh, really? You want to be a manager or director or executive vice president and not have risk? By definition, there's risk. If you want no risk, start your own firm. Although that risk then just changes to whether or not you'll make any money at all.
Right. I mean, the way I kind of think about it is, if you're doing it your way, you've got a good reason to do it your way. Now, either that reason is good enough to keep doing it in the face of it maybe being the wrong approach, or maybe you're not following the right approach to begin with. And to go back to that example, Mark, the reason in the face of you always saying, why are you doing it that way? Well, I wouldn't do it like that, is because I knew my way would work. I had very good reasons for my way. I wasn't just floundering around randomly choosing out of the air, oh, maybe I'll try this fun, shiny thing. I knew why I was doing what I was doing, and it made sense, and I knew it was gonna probably work. If I wasn't confident or uncertain, or I just kind of made it up and I was like, I probably would have taken your guidance and done something different. So what's that?
Yeah, exactly. There's a great story here, and it's one of my favorite stories, so I get to tell it. Great story about President Eisenhower, the United States president during the 50s, who he appointed while he was president, the former CEO of General Motors, a guy named Charles Wilson. No, not that Charlie, a different Charlie, to become Secretary of Defense. And Eisenhower, of course, had experience as the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe, leading U.S. and combined Allied armies, World War II. He knew a lot about defense. And at one point, Secretary Wilson asked Eisenhower for approval to make some organizational changes in the Navy and the Marine Corps. And President Eisenhower wrote back on the note, Charlie, you run defense. We both can't do it, and I won't do it. I was elected to worry about a lot of the things in the day-to-day operations of one of my departments. Mm-hmm. I just love that, right? And frankly, folks, when you get to be a director, or a senior director, or a junior vice president, or assistant vice president, or managing director, or whatever, you keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be running the teams. Now, you might say, well, what if my teams is messing up? Okay, make some suggestions. Or, we mentioned risk a minute ago, find a new manager who will do it effectively.
That's what I was going to say. If you don't trust the people below you to do what they're doing, then maybe you got the wrong people.
Exactly.
That's all for today's cast, folks. Join us again next week while we continue our topic.